The following program contains language and themes of an adult nature. If you feel you may be offended by such things, why not go to the BBC Sounds app to find an alternative listening experience? This is Answers Time on BBC Radio Kent. Hello and welcome to Answers Time, and we come to you today from Tunbridge Wells, first place in England to ban the big issue. And we're in the Grand Old Theatre, which used to be a BBC shop that sold DVDs, but doesn't anymore because DVDs went the way of the dinosaur and no one is interested in what they have to offer. Speaking of which, let us turn to the views of tonight's panel. As Michael Gove and others have said, the age of the expert is over. And Michael Gove and others is never wrong, which is why Answers Time is brand new. And instead of experts, exists to give stage time to real-life people from real life to debate and discuss the subjects that matter. And tonight they are not in order. Tawny Fuller is from Tunbridge Wells and once went on Dragon's Den and failed to score funding for her app Blackspot, which allows users to warn one another if a minority was thinking of moving into the area. She also identifies as Alan's wife, without any of us knowing who Alan is. Jeremy Bellamy is an accountant who describes his hobbies as mowing the lawn, M&S and meal deal for a tenner, etc. And was the first person in his family to go to Oxford when his train broke down outside Nutley. Jeff from Headcorn is a man that lives in Headcorn. And finally, Trevor Blowinghorn is an interior consultant from Edenbridge with 35 years of experience of matching drapes and carpets. He could have been Britain's first young black MP, but was thwarted when donning that sort of makeup fell out of favour in the mid to late 70s. He's been married for 20 years, and he tells us he happily enjoys caring for his elderly mother. Will you please welcome the panel? Don't forget that you can follow us by using a hashtag. Now, can we take our first question from the audience, please? We've got a roving microphone, of course, which will come over to you. Our first question from the audience, please.
Thanks. The Tory policy of austerity and the socio-political environment it has engendered vis-a-vis universal credit gives much food for thought. So does the panel think it's time for an end to the cyclical dialectic of Labour spending followed by Tory cutting, if we're to produce a homogenised multicultural society free of the Kafkaesque nightmare we currently inhabit?
Thank you. So the question is whatever he said, but he certainly mentioned food in there, and that'll do. We're a so-called nation of food lovers, aren't we, Trevor Blowinghorn? There's clearly a problem with it, so is it time to ban food?
Well, James, I see it as a necessary evil. Now, my wife, the missus, she don't like food. She don't go for food. She's discovered, and you can look this up yourselves online if you've got nothing better to do, that half a pint of unleaded gives you all the calories you need for the day. Now, I can't say it. She comes trying to give me all kisses and that with her petrol breath, and I'm saying no. And, you know, it does spoil the opportunity to have a fag after a meal, we discovered quite tragically one day. So, I mean, I'm not big on food. The one food that, you know, I do enjoy is crackers in bed with me mum. Yeah, at the end of the day, she's best friend, isn't she, your mum? And I go around there, you know, 4, 7, 12 times a week. And, you know, because you can tell her all your secrets. All of them. And we have crackers in bed. Use the marge. You know, if there's any crumbs, just, you know, dabbing away with the
moistened finger. Already answering the question. Could we, let's, Tawny, would you be in favour of gay food getting married?
No, no, no. I like food, but I think food is for families. And because if we didn't have families, how would you show you loved them if you weren't cooking for them? That's basically what I've done my entire life. I cook, and that's how I show love. I certainly wouldn't tell someone I love them, but if I give them a Yorkshire pudding that's risen beautifully in the oven, then they'll know, won't they? And if you take that away from me, how am I going to show things? Because I'm repressed.
Let's talk about the facts here, Jeremy, because you've had a lot of experience with food up to now, because it's been legal, haven't you? So I wonder where we go now in a society that we could call post-food at any given point. I mean, what does a barrel of food cost now? It's $150.
$150 a barrel of food. Yeah. look, you know, I'm in the unique position here that, you know, for once, I agree with the rest of the panel. I think there's a lot to be said for clean food, vegan food, vegetarian food. But what I would like to see is perhaps an end to Greg Wallace. He's the main reason for banning food. See his... Thank you. His face... His face all over, you know, food programs makes me feel bilious.
Yeah, it is a fact, isn't it, that you can walk into any supermarket, and you can literally buy food over the counter without any kind of background check or paperwork.
Well, we used to have something in this country called religion, called the church. Now, apparently, now on a Sunday, you can go out, you can buy magazines.
Yep. We've got a phone call for one of our podcast listeners. We are going to be taking some phone calls. If you'd like to telephone in while you're listening to this, then do please use a number. Let's go to the phone lines now. Paul's on the line.
Hello, John, it's Paul. I was sitting on the bus and I was surrounded by these kids that were all eating junk food. And there's a real obesity issue in this country. And obviously, Jamie Oliver and school dinners have failed. And we need something new. And then it hit me like a bolt from the blue. We should eat the kids, the obese ones.
Now, you were listening to that phone call there from Paul. Should we eat children, specifically fat children, because they're more nutritious? And would that solve the obesity crisis? If you eat a fat child, no fat child.
Well, what I would say is, James, if you're asking me to eat a human child, ideally I'd want a vegan. Because they're grass-fed, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's going to be a more tender meat. The thing is that I think we're forgetting about, you know, banned food, sure, why not? Then again, that's the end of poo, isn't it?
Well, I don't want to get too...
what are you going to put on your dahlias, James?
It's John. I don't want to get too bogged down in that, but, I mean, there are some people who are suggesting that the end to the food crisis, and I don't know what you think of this, Jeff, from Head Corner, is that if... Have you seen the film The Human Centipede?
Yes.
Right. Well, if you... if you sew people together...
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Mouth to bottom...
Yes.
Right, the food will then just be shared, won't it? Is that...
That's absolutely right. That's why I opened a Human Centipede... plant in Headcorn.
It's more a farm, isn't it?
Well, it is a farm, really, but we use the word plant for tax reasons. But the reason... the Human Centipede plant, anyone could come in and sign up and get sold up. That's the little motto we got there. And it's going really well. The amount of fertiliser we're producing from the back end is obscene.
Mm. It is literally obscene.
It really is.
Tawny, would you eat food that's been expelled already?
I wouldn't. And here's the thing I want to talk about. Why do we snack all the time? Why are you eating on the bus? Why can't you eat in your house? There's a table there. There's no tables on the bus. And why do you always have to drink water? I didn't used to drink water carried around in a bottle when I was younger. I just had a drink of water when I was somewhere where there was water.
Can we take another question from the audience over there? You, sir, with the face over there.
Well, we both have a face.
Yeah, your face.
Boris Johnson said recently that it was a scandal that the Attorney General's legal advice on Brexit was not made public. Does the panel agree with me that it's time to regulate advice of any kind, and what would the panel's advice be on how to do that?
Yes, okay, thank you. This is after many commentators have been saying that advice is all over the shop and there's simply too much of it conflicting. The Citizens Advice Bureau said this week that the amount of advice they are called upon to dish out has increased exponentially, yet there are citizens waiting for advice in corridors now, on beds. Some have been waiting for advice for over a week, some have died, it's unacceptable. Is it, Tawny Fuller?
I'm happy to give advice at any point. You just need to... You don't even have to ask me and I'll give it. My daughter-in-law is a constant recipient of my advice, whether she wants it or not. But it's all very good and very accurate and I wish she'd take it more. So if people want advice, there's lots of people willing to give it. You just need to, you know, maybe do some backstreet advice. You know,
I'm a
backstreet advisor.
Let's get this in the public domain. Are you saying that you would be happy to see the opening of backstreet advice clinics?
Oh yes, yes. In fact, I'd highly recommend it. I think feminists have a lot to answer for.
Can I come in, because we're getting more and more of this? You know, the police services cuts. You know, to the police services. Suddenly, you've got vigilantes out there. You put cuts to the advice services. Suddenly, you've got people like this woman giving out advice. Now, you're not regulated. I've had some terrible advice in my life. I was told to buy Bitcoin last December. Before that, it was, oh, get Betamax. It's a better picture. You know, another time it was, please don't marry our daughter. We don't think.
You're quite
anyway,
right.
Yes. So, and actually, 35 years later, after, you know, a very happy marriage with the occasional business trip to San Francisco and Singapore and the Lebanon, we've had a very good time.
Should we then implement, should we stop working class people on the street and search stop and search for advice?
No, just stop them. Just stop them.
Just stop the working.
Oh, yes, just stop them. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Just stop them. Stop them on the street.
Let's just go. We've got another phone call coming in. On the line now, this is Deshante in Chicago.
I can't go outside these days without being slapped in the face with advice. I'm constantly being told what to inject into my face and whether or not to eat eggs. And as soon as I decide to eat eggs, I'm told to stop. And then when I stop, I'm told to eat eggs again immediately, or my cat might explode. We are like pigs, wallowing in verbiage slurry that's being flung at us from a massive advice pipe owned by Google or Bookface or some such thing. I remember the good old days, before the internet spiders came along, when we all lived fresh, innocent lives largely revolving around apples. If we wanted advice back then, and we rarely did, we did what any normal person would do and visited the wise man in the woods, who basically would say anything if we fed him marzipan and buffed him up with floor polish.
Well, that's a fair point, isn't it? Jeremy Bellamy, what do you make of these internet spiders?
What I find is that you should stay away from certain sites, or my understanding, I think I've got this right, that they could be infiltrated with spiders.
You're talking, yeah, we're talking about these hardcore advice sites.
Yes,
of
that's
course.
Correct.
They call it the dark web.
Yes.
Hence the spiders. And yeah. And this is where you can go in and, you know, if anyone is of a nervous disposition, I apologise, but you can go in there and you can get advice. I mean, it's under the counter advice, certainly, but it's dirty advice.
Well, you've absolutely nailed it on the head there, James. Sit back, you know, I'll use a VPN tunnel to a US server and then access the dark web, you know, kick back with a glass of Sauvignon Blanc after the missus has gone to bed. And, you know, just browsing, just having a look.
Well, let's put a number on it, okay? How many advice?
Seven
advice.
Yeah.
How many advice?
Well, who from? Me? All
in
of it?
Just in general. Just a number.
24.
Okay. How many advice?
No.
Two.
Okay.
Two? That's a joke.
Well, yeah, you say it's a joke.
You're a joker.
You're a joker.
Can you calm down, please? Yeah. We're trying to be very civil at this thing.
Well, you know, there's... There's a difference in the numbers there. You're saying two, you're saying 25. I mean,
she said 24. Yeah,
yes, I didn't...
She did say 24.
I tried to say 24, but I was confused by the question. But I refuse to admit it when I'm confused by questions, so I gave you an answer, and I'm sticking by it.
I'll give you some advice. Be less aggressive.
I'm not aggressive. I'm just a woman who's talking.
I can tell you that as of today, the national average of advice is 4.5.
Yeah,
that's the official number.
Oh, that's very low.
You were way off.
No, yeah. Well, I'm right.
Okay, let's move on. time now for another question. I think the lady over there has a question for us. Sorry, not over there. Over there.
Are rainbows racist?
Right, well, that's a good question, isn't it? They've been called sky spoilers, cloud ruiners, and weather bastards. Pardon my the word bastards, but is it fair? After all, the opposite of rainbows critics have been swift to point out that rainbows have been around longer than racism, so to suddenly call them racist seems a little disingenuous. Would it help and make rainbows not so racist if we called them refractions of water droplets of colour? Should we wake up and smell the woke bows? Are rainbows racist, Trevor?
Well, just like racism, they're a necessary evil, aren't they? Because, I don't know if you know this, they're chemtrails left by party aeroplanes. Mm. So You can actually see where the plane's taken off and where it's landed. Which so 15% of all rainbows come from Luton. I don't mind like things like the rainbow flag. I don't mind people having the rainbow flag in their own homes, right? But right. I don't want it in my face fluttering right. away.
But the thing about a rainbow flag is that if you go up to it, it just moves further away, doesn't it? That's the point of a rainbow flag. I want to look at the history of it, Jeremy. Now, rainbows were invented when, and let me get this right, yeah. I think...
24 years ago.
Well, it was... Alexander Fleming, the famous scientist, didn't he? He left some sky in a Petri dish overnight.
Yeah.
And when he got back the next morning, there was a rainbow in there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's an accidental discovery. But, yeah. you know, is it something that, you know, they used to be fine, didn't they? They were sort of where, you know, goblins lived at the end of it with a pot of gold. And now, are rainbows racist?
are they racist? No, they're not, because they're multicoloured, multifaceted. My interest is there a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? And if so, isn't this country entitled to keep it? Instead of handing it over to a lot of rainbow-fancying foreigners, you know.
Tawny, what do you make of that? I mean, he said that rainbows are multicoloured, but they're not all coloured, are they?
No. Well, I don't understand colour, and so I've started censoring myself about what I actually think. And what that does is it makes me stutter a bit. I haven't stopped thinking it. I've just stopped saying it.
What you're saying, basically, is that Richard of York did all that war for nothing. Surely.
Final question on this point. Jeff in Headcorn. Should prisms go to prison?
Absolutely. Get them in there. Put them in there. Get them in the prison. Prismers.
Time for our next question. Have a listen to this. Now that's Heart of Glass by Blondie, and our next question comes from a non-specific gendered gentleman in the front row here.
Is having hearts, and indeed anything else made of glass, too risky these days when it seems that we're too sensitive about anything and everything?
Right, so even though you just heard that word for word, I'm going to repeat it for no real reason. Is having hearts, and indeed anything else made of glass, too risky these days when it seems we're too sensitive about anything and everything? What do we do about the very real problem of glass, Jeremy Bellamy?
You say glass is how you pronounce it. But
glass.
The thing is about glass.
Glass.
About glass. Is that my wife quite likes knickknacks on the mantelpiece, and very often, you know, I start an evening class and
class.
An evening class.
Glass.
To make glass. And
glass.
Even glass to make glass. And and I've started making all sorts of figurines, we call them, out of glass.
That's
and my evening class. And I get them home, and I've made all sorts of hand blown glass glass objects. I've blown a number of dogs, gnomes. I've blown little fishermen, cats, bunnies. You know, and I think it would be a terrible shame. It would be a terrible shame not to have them on my mantelpiece.
Trevor Blowinghorn.
No.
Well, all right, okay. Tawny.
Yes.
You are middle class.
I am.
upper middle class.
Yes.
Do beg your pardon.
Please.
So you
class. I mean, I have to agree with Jeremy on that one.
Well,
definitely class.
I mean, I as the host, I must remain impartial, but it's class. How many? A lot of controversy about how many green bottles should be hanging on the wall. Should we bring back hanging for green bottles?
We should bring back hanging. But what I think is, I blame the feminists for this again, because everything's their stupid fault. And if they hadn't smashed that ceiling, then there wouldn't be all the bits of glass around for men to stand on, and then I wouldn't be sitting there picking glass out of Alan's feet while he's sitting there bemoaning the fact that he can't pat a woman on the bottom anymore. And I say, being patted on the bottom is a small price to pay for never having to open a door.
Let's go to our next question, which comes from someone's mouth, as usual, I think, over here. Yes, you, sir, there with the... I don't know what that is, but you anyway, sir.
The government are always talking about the length and breadth of the country, but surely breadth is the same as width, and we've already got length and breadth. Also depth and height and girth and so on. Should we not be looking to save money by cutting back on one of those? Maybe width, for example?
Right. Should we be saving money... Thank you for your question. Should we be saving money by cutting back on one or more measurements? Now, latest figures have no way of showing how much width costs the taxpayer per year, but let's assume we'd be better off without it, or would we, Jeff? I can see you shaking your face.
Now, look... Width, right? Pointless. Absolutely pointless.
Because we've got breadth.
We've got breadth.
And girth. Yeah.
And the other ones, circumferences.
Yeah.
We've got all of them. We don't need the width. My learned friend in the audience is absolutely correct. Now, as my dad always said, he's going back to the advice, right? It's about touching the sides. Now, if it does that,
yeah,
it's fine. I'm going to stand by that.
If we laid everything... Tawny,
yes.
If we laid everything end to end, everything wide was laid end to end, that would create a length, wouldn't it? Would that solve the problem?
That's the problem with measurements, I think. And again, I've got to blame the feminists, because if they hadn't made us all, you know, love our own bodies, then women wouldn't be eating more than one vol-au-vent in an evening, and then we'd all be much better off.
Yeah.
Less wide.
Fewer.
Fewer wide, yeah. And more angry.
Let me give you an example of what they've done over in the continental. They've been doing these trials in Sweden. I don't know whether you've heard about these trials.
Yeah.
What they've done there, they've turned
probably
everything
sexual.
Everything around in Sweden.
So saunas and that, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's what they've done is they've decided that everything should be long both ways.
Yeah.
Okay. So, for example, they've rearranged elk. Right.
Ugh.
So they've got elk, and they've turned it round so it's wider than it is long. And what you can then do is you can store elk in a field, because fields are long than they are wide.
So sorry, what have they done here? They just moved the horns round the side or something.
Or the face? Have they put the face on the side?
Is it like the handlebars on a bicycle when they ship it?
I'm not going to take any lectures from the Swedes about that sort of thing. No. I mean, we've operated very well with length and breadth, you know, and height, breadth, yeah. You know, over, you know, millennia. I'm not taking any lessons from the Swedes about their elks.
All right, let's go to the phones. We've got another phone call, podcast listeners called in. This is Ross from Ferratu.
Calling because I don't know width. Width. I don't know width. The horizontal measurement thing.
What about well, very good point. Very good point.
Good.
It's a very good point.
I'll go with
very
that.
Good. Yeah, it's absolutely right.
That's changed my world view.
Yeah,
completely about every subject we've covered.
Yeah. Mrs. Thatcher, let's talk about the 80s.
Width snatcher.
That's what they called her, didn't they?
I heard that.
She closed down the width mines. Now, this is where we used to get all of our width from, of course, prior to the 1980s. She said we didn't need width anymore, which is part of the argument. She said there were enough measurements without width. She closed the mines. This caused an enormous set of riots, didn't it, in Britain between the manufacturers of rulers and the police. Thatcher, the width snatcher, Tawny.
Oh, she's a woman who I like. And I think the only people who were worried about her snatching width were people to whom width matters, and they're not people who actually matter. That's the thing. When we listen to all these, oh, she did such terrible things, oh, snatching width here, there and everywhere, and you go, but who is she snatching it from? People who don't count. So why do we care?
Do we care, Jeff?
Yes.
Oh, you're probably one of the widths, aren't you?
Are you a width apologist?
Do you know what? Yeah, I'm going to come out right now and say, yes, I'm a width apologist. Look, I don't go for the new numerical lengths or breadths or blah, blah, blah. In my eyes, width is the most important thing. Really.
That's what my missus says as well, actually, funny.
She does. No, she does say that, yeah. She does say that.
We have quite a lot of fights about that. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Of course it doesn't matter. She's like, it does.
It really does.
Yes, if you're trying to fit a sofa through.
Which you could. And I think really that's all anyone has any patience for. Now, if you'd like to react to anything you've heard in this week's edition of Answers Time, then do follow us. We are on the social media. We're on Facebuzz and Hi Hat. Or you can like us on Ding Dong or rate us on Patty Cake Baker's Man. We're also on Grindr. And that's it. Thank you to my guests, Jeremy Bellamy, Trevor Blowinghorn, Tawny Fuller, Alan's wife, and Jeff from Headcorn. Next week, Answers Time is back in this studio due to a lack of budget for travelling. So if you'd like tickets, do. Good night. That was Answers Time. It was an unusual production for BBC Radio Kent and BBC Sounds, and it was produced by Nick Minter.